Hey everybody, I'm Jay Worthy and this is the podcast for anyone trying to inject some adventure, purpose and balance into their lives. 28 Summers is all about living life adventurously, seizing the moment and optimizing your life. In this second season of 28 Summers, I'm building upon the messages in season one with the help of a series of incredible guests who are all in their own individual ways, living life to the full, following their passions and living an adventurous life every single day. My guest today is Lucy Shepherd, a truly inspiring person who at the age of just 28 is already at the forefront of modern exploration. From mountains to rainforests to the Arctic, she's already achieved so much and she's not done yet. She captures her endeavours in her own inimitable style and shares them with the world, raising awareness of the effects of climate change and human impact. At 23, she was made a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society. And she's now also on the council for the Scientific Exploration Society. She spends her time doing talks, sharing adventure tips, and of course, dreaming up and going on huge expeditions to keep pushing her own personal boundaries. She's committed to helping ensure we have more diversity in the adventure space, and she is so incredibly down to earth. I absolutely love this conversation, and I really hope you do too. Lucy, welcome to the 28 Summers podcast. It is so great to have you here. I'm really excited. I heard you on another podcast a few months ago and just had to get in touch and see whether you'd join me. I know you're busy, but although we're all locked down these days, so maybe you have got more time than I realized. But I do really appreciate your time and I'm excited to talk to you today. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm really excited to talk to you as well.
Great stuff. So let's dive right in because I want to be respectful of your time. And you know, when I read about your story and I've read some of the interviews you've done, you've already done so much in your life already. It's kind of difficult to know where to start, right? But I think the best place to start is that those childhood experiences. I think you grew up in fairly rural Suffolk. I'm from Norfolk, by the way, so there's a bit of a competition there.
Absolutely.
I was born in Northwest Norfolk. But I'm curious to know, I mean, obviously growing up in Norfolk, there's a lot of open space, and I found that I had quite an adventurous childhood. Was it fairly similar for you as well?
Yeah, I mean, of course, in Suffolk and Norfolk, you don't have the mountains or even hills for that matter. But what you do have is a lot of open fields and freedom and trees. And I mean, it wasn't like I was sort of particularly adventurous. You know, it wasn't like I was jumping out of planes or things like that that kids now you see doing at sort of 13. But what I was able to do is, because I lived in the countryside, my parents were doing up a house for many, many, many years. And they would be so busy and they would just let me free into the fields and, you know, climbing trees around, sort of going as far as I liked, really, for hours and hours on end. And I think that was really the start of my imagination, and just because I am an only child and I sort of grew up just really, really enjoying being in the outside, not necessarily thinking it meant anything, but that was all I had. Because we were doing this sort of old house up that had nothing, there was no electricity or anything like that, it wasn't like I could watch TV easily. It was just go rain or shine, no jacket on, of course, just shorts and a t-shirt, and just climb trees and go into trenches that are next to the fields and just explore in that way. And I really love the idea of my parents thinking I was going off exploring, and that's what I was doing, you know, 8 years old, going off exploring the fields. And you just felt this self sort of freedom that, you know, is quite hard to get even as an adult if you're not going out to seek it, you know, actually being mindful of that.
Right. That's amazing. And there's so many parallels with my own childhood. And, because I used to roam off as well. And I love the fact that you use the word imagination, because that for me is the essence of it. There was clearly no mountains to climb, but it was, you know, swimming in rivers and going through woods, and we were close to the beach as well, so we were always at the seaside. And it's funny, actually, recently with my parents talking about that, and they had no idea what we were up to. Normally myself and my best friend, maybe my youngest of my brothers, and they talked about this space that we were not allowed to go to. And I said, oh, we were in there, you know, pretty much every day after school. And they were absolutely mortified that's absolutely where we've been spending our time.
That's
it. This old breaker's yard that we were climbing over rusty tractors and stuff, and they couldn't believe that that's where we'd spent most of our time.
I have similar memories, and haystacks and things. Like, just, I hate the idea of kids climbing hay bales and things, but no, of course we were. And when you said about imagination again, it was, you know, it doesn't matter that you're not in the jungle or on the mountains. If you're in one of those forests or woods, you could be in the jungle, you know, you could be anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned your parents. I mean, I think in and of itself, them getting a house that didn't have necessarily all the mod cons and renovating, that's quite adventurous anyway, right? So do you think that was part of the spark for you for living adventurously? And you know, were they strong role models for you in getting outdoors?
They are not sort of explorers, or they weren't, you know, no background in the military or anything like that. But what they have always been, and I feel very privileged, of course, because of that, is they've always been supportive. So whatever phase I was going through, whether it be something that lasted, you know, 3 weeks or something, you know, they'd always support it, which for me meant that I felt, I sort of, now thinking back to it, you know, I would always think, well, I can try that because I'll be supported, which is something, you know, not all kids, a lot of kids do not have. And I know that. So when we had that awkward conversation, not too long ago, it was probably when I was, you know, 20, 21, you know, saying out loud that I want to be an adventurer. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but they didn't laugh in my face. And they, you know, it was, I felt like I was going back to me being sort of 10 years old saying I want to be a rock star or something. Right. You know, oh, this was a phase, you'll grow out of it. But they knew I was serious at that point. So it's very important for parents to, you know, trust your child, I think, because that really, really does come across later in life, I think.
I think that's really powerful. Do your parents get worried when you go off on some of these big expeditions, or are they pretty laid back?
Yeah, no, they get worried. Jungles and high mountains, I think they're pretty secure now when I go off to the Arctic and things like that. But jungle's another story. And as hard as you try with your sort of in reaches and your spot trackers, these things that send out these GPS signals, in the jungle canopy over where I head, it's just not reliable.
Right.
And so there are periods of time where you just go completely off the map. And they have to decide with, you know, other people who are sort of being as my backup, is this a moment where we get worried, or do we wait it out, you know, have something happened, or do we just wait? Yeah, so it's quite tricky for them. And I know that they get worried, and I come back and tell all the stories afterwards, and then they're just thankful they didn't know that at the time.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, definitely don't tell them while you're there. So I'd like to maybe just talk a little bit more about childhood. I know that you went on an adventure course. I think you were 15 when you went. And that seems like that really opened up your eyes to the kind of world of exploration, even this word expedition and what that might mean for you. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I was 15, and I think my dad had started to really see that maybe this is something that I could be quite good at, being in outdoors, whether it just be hiking or maybe an instructor or something like that. And he came across a course that he knew existed when he was a young kid, the Ridgeway Adventure School. It's in Northwest Scotland, but up in Sutherland. So really, really high up, up on the map. And I thought that was a great idea. I mean, I didn't even know you could do that kind of thing. So I went off at 15 and I joined. It was 2 weeks. And for the first time, I felt like I found my people. We found this confidence that I'd never had. I was actually able to be kind of the leader of the pack rather than the person who didn't really know what to say or didn't have anything to sort of put forward to the group. I found that I was good at, you know, just plodding on up mountains and just having the sort of mindset of just to keep going, even in whatever pain you were in. And that opened my eyes to thinking that maybe this is something I could be good at and something that I really enjoyed as well. And maybe, well, it's always been there. And so that was where I was introduced to the word expedition. And I thought that word was just so, like, we talked about imagination, that just filled me with thoughts and dreams of things that I could do, because I was under the impression, it wasn't like I grew up with reading books of Shackleton, but suddenly expeditions, I could do these mini expeditions. And now after that finished, I wanted to figure out how I could do more and sort of serious expeditions. So that's where it all really started.
So that genuinely really sparked something in you that you've kind of never looked back from, really, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I just, it was one of those moments where I came back knowing that it wasn't, maybe previously I'd been at school and things and I had been labelled the shy kid or the quiet kid. But it wasn't my fault at all. I just wasn't in the right place. Right. Wasn't in the right environment to bloom or to, you know, be the best person I could be. And then I found that I could be this person and I wanted more of it. And I think it's always a little bit of that which I'm chasing after when I go and do expeditions, is I want to feel, I just know that I'm a better person. I know that I'm you've got so much energy and more enthusiastic because I am in the right place, pushing myself in my right self, but also being better for other people and helping them as well.
I think there's something really powerful about that message as well. And I hear it time and time again when people tell their stories around surrounding yourself with people who kind of think like you and have the same passions and ambitions as you. And it becomes this virtuous circle, doesn't it? You know, the more you spend time with people like that, the more you're exposed to opportunities that excite you.
Absolutely. And also it's something to really remember when people are growing up, or if you haven't found it yet yourself, is maybe you're just not in the right place. You know, we grow up thinking, it's made to believe that you've got to be like this and this and go to school, go to university, then get a job. But maybe you haven't flourished in that environment. So go try other things. Like, you don't need to go to university to get an apprenticeship maybe, or keep trying new things is kind of what I think you should do. I got lucky because I tried new things and that happened to be the thing that really, really got to me. But I think if people haven't found it, even if you're in your 50s, 60s, then go on, just keep trying new things and you never know where it'll take you.
That's an amazing message. And I couldn't agree more. And I think for a lot of people, you know, if they don't go down a certain path when they're in their childhood years, they feel like they've missed the boat. And this whole podcast is actually really about helping people realize that it's never too late to start living your life and to do the things that make you happy. And, you know, it's such a short time we have on this planet, so why not fill it with things that make you smile?
Absolutely. And it's so, so easy. I mean, I'm guilty of it myself sometimes, is thinking that it's too late to do this or it's too late to do that, because I've already put these sort of goalposts in that I'm already heading in this direction. I don't want to restart again. But I mean, it's definitely worth it if you just rip off that plaster, rip off that band-aid and do it if you really, really believe it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got to say, just because we're talking about it right now, is going to bring it up later, but you've actually inspired me, because I love being adventurous and going on, you know, expeditions and doing various challenges. But one of the things that I've often wanted to do is have more kind of exploration in those, genuine exploration. And I think for a long time I was guilty of thinking that I was too old for that, or it's too late to go down that path. But actually I don't believe it is. I believe that if you want to, you just have to go out there and find those opportunities. And so that's, you've inspired me to do that, so thank you.
Oh, thank you. I really do think that some people get put off by, oh well, I need to learn all these skills and all of that, but it's much easier than you think. As soon as you start things, I mean, it's like a recipe. As soon as you start it, it's one step after another, and before you know it, you've got the amazing cake.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm a huge advocate of saying to people, just, you know, you don't necessarily have to have the whole thing figured out. You just need to get going. And for me, that is absolutely what this podcast experience has been. I knew nothing about podcasting before I started. Yeah. Some would argue I still know nothing about podcasting, but it has allowed me to meet some incredible people and experience their stories and be inspired by their stories and share those with other people, but also take personal value from them as well. And I know that if I'd have thought too much about how complicated setting up a podcast was, I would never have done it. And I just one day just recorded something and put it out there. So that's definitely something I'm in favor of.
Oh, absolutely in favor of that too. It absolutely blows my mind if you're sort of a perfectionist and want everything in place before you do something, because you're never gonna do it in that case. Like, everything I do, I just commit to it in some way, shape or form, and you just figure it out afterwards. Like, it will happen. You know it will happen.
Perfect. So, this expedition, this adventure course at 15 definitely ignited something in you. How long after that was it before you went on what you would call your first kind of proper expedition? And what was that like?
It was 3 years later. But I didn't. So after the course, I came back from that and I sort of was looking for these expeditions I could join. And I think I was 16 when I saw this advert in the paper asking, it wasn't going to be in 2 years' time, so it wasn't until I was 18, asking for 18 to 25-year-olds to take part in a scientific Arctic expedition up in Svalbard. And they had this beautiful picture of this, you know, the Svalbard Arctic scenery of people polking, which is skiing, cross-country skiing with sleds in a line, and this beautiful, beautiful cold sun in the cold Arctic wilderness. And I saw that and I just thought, wow, is there even any possibility that that could be me? And there was going to be 10 people that they were going to take, and it's an arm of the Royal Geographical Society. And I applied and went through. Back then you had to go through a sort of interview process, so someone would actually come to your house and they interviewed you to make sure you were of the right right mind to do it. You had to go through some training weekends, and then you had to fundraise, and fundraising is, I mean, anyone, any explorer, adventurer that you ask, fundraising is the hardest thing of the whole expedition a lot of the time. So that was my first taster of fundraising. But I managed to do it. And when I was 18, I headed off to the Svalbard Arctic with 9 other people. We were fully trained up, you know, trained up with things like rifles for polar bears, trained up with how to manage yourself in the cold and tents, all these things that we were just put on a real sort of big, big course on. And suddenly we were out in this wilderness, you know, just feeling like we were on top of the world, because we were in this team, the close-knit group of people, facing the odds, and we were out there for 10 weeks. So 10 weeks, for, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, is a long time. So when you come back from that, you really feel like that was your whole world. So coming back from that really shook me up. But I knew whilst I was there that I was just having this the time of my life, and that this could never ever stop. You know, people would come back, even like the rest of my team, most of them would accept when other people would say to you, you know, wow, what an amazing once in a lifetime experience. And you always hear that, especially when you're that age before university or just after university. People always tell others when they've just done something, especially traveling, people love to say that about traveling, is wow, what an amazing once in a lifetime experience. And that hit me like a ton of bricks, because I thought, if that's once in a lifetime, then this is, you know, what's the rest of life going to be like? It's all downhill from here, is it? Is that all I get? You know, I've had this taste of feeling like that, and now it's stripped away. And now I have to go and do something that isn't going to make me feel like that. I'm not going to be that person that, you know, I actually admired and felt proud of myself. I'm not going to get that again. And so after a bit of a rocky patch, coming back thinking that that was the case, then I sort of started to discover that actually this could be something. If I don't know how I'm going to do it, but if this is what I want to do, I'm going to keep doing expeditions for as long as I can.
That's amazing. I love that that message around, you know, once in a lifetime. Actually, it doesn't need to be like that. You can, it's how you choose to live your life. So how did you do that? So at first you thought maybe this is a once in a lifetime thing, but then you quickly realized that it didn't need to be. And so what did the next expedition look like, and how did you make that one happen?
Well, I sort of started to accept that this couldn't happen, but I sort of got obsessed with running and things like that, trying to fill this hole that the expeditions gave me. And I could have gone into a downward spiral because of that, but I met someone called Neil Lawton, who is an explorer in his own right. He's done things like the Seven Summits. He's done Everest, been on Everest and up Everest multiple times, and done the North and South Pole and things like that. And I met him because I was doing a talk at the Royal Geographical Society after this, a few years after this expedition. And I approached him because I had found out, I knew his name, and I knew that he was doing expeditions all the time. And like, how can I be a part of that? I want to do that too. And we exchanged details, and I met up with him at the tea room of the Royal Geographical Society a few weeks later. And I must have made some sort of impression, because then a few months later, out of the blue, I received this email from Neil. And I'm only 19 at the time. And he's saying he's got an expedition planned up on the Hardangervidda in Norway, reenacting the Heroes of Telemark mission, which is a mission that some war heroes took. And he was inviting me to be on that, along with 5 other sort of ex-special forces guys. and didn't want to come. And, you know, he was taking a risk on me, but I think he had seen that this is something that I'm serious about. A little bit of a game as well, maybe testing me, you know, even if I say yes, then surely I'm serious. That's the first step. And then secondly, going out there with them. And I mean, I felt like it was, you know, a bit of piece of cake, you know, this is what I'm born to do. So from that moment on, after I'd sort of shown myself with the special forces guys and come back and just felt like, okay, this is something that I want to do, then I've got to keep meeting people who do this sort of thing, because that's how it started, that's how I got that one. And keep meeting people, keep getting more skills, and sort of, like you said, don't have it all mapped out, but take one trip, one skill at a time. Every 6 months, you know, try and figure out how I can better myself in this area.
That sounds like a pretty gnarly group as well, ex-special forces soldiers that you were with. How did they receive you? What was the training like, and what was the expedition like?
The training was up in near Loch Tay in Scotland with one of the guys, David Fox Pitt, and he has a house up there. And the training was funny, actually, because we were doing crazy, you know, it was a cold, cold Scottish winter, and we were doing these marathons in hiking boots and things like that, and, you know, putting you to the test, which was no bother for me because I was actually, you know, a runner and things like that. But what I do remember is there was one guy who had come down from where we were going to get all the kit, up on the Hardangervidda plateau. He'd come down to come and talk to us about what we were going to face and to tell us all the dangers and all that sort of thing. And I could tell from the offset that he wasn't going to be in our group, but he was just going to advise. And he just looked at me, and he didn't know my background or anything like that. And he saw a sort of fragile blonde young girl amongst all these, you know, military guys, and just thought, what on earth are they doing? And he didn't hide his thoughts. And he was quite, you know, she's going to need this, she's going to need these extra things to keep warm, she's going to need this and this. And I remember Neil sort of just standing in front of me and saying, she will be fine, she knows what she's doing. And I knew he had my back, and the other guys saw that. And so that was the moment that I was like, okay, they trust me, this is going to be okay.
That's awesome. I mean, everything I've seen from you, you've got this kind of steely determination and self-belief. And I'm wondering where that came from. Where do you think that comes from?
Honestly, like, because I do hear that fairly often, and I really don't know what I think about it, because I suppose I do, because I do things and I just know that I'm going to do it. But I think it's something that you can practice, and I think it's something that you can learn. And often I think you fool yourself, and you just, I mean, going back to childhood, my imagination was brilliant, and I hopefully it still is. And I would just pretend games all the time. So a lot of the time I swear I'm just pretending that it's going to be okay and I'll figure it out. And then, I mean, if I'm scared in the jungle, like I was recently, especially at the start, you know, you're that moment where you're on the plane and you realize, oh, what am I doing? You know, this is pretty gnarly, this. Yeah. You just pretend that you're all okay with it.
Right.
And by pretending enough, you know, before you know it, you have got this self-belief of that you're going to be okay. So it's something you just practice, I think.
I love that your view of that is that it's teachable, because I think that a lot of people listening to your story and to other, you know, explorers and adventurers often feel like this is some innate quality that people are born with. And I think it's really inspiring that you are sharing that it's ultimately something that you teach yourself over time. And there's an honesty there as well, you know, that you're on the plane going to Guyana or wherever you're heading to, and you're scared, you know, and you're thinking, wow, I'm not sure that I should be doing this. I think that's all part of it.
Yeah, definitely. And the key is not letting other people know that you're scared either. Once it matters. When that plane landed, you know, then I was in full role of, I'm going to be okay. Because if you show any doubt, you know, other people are going to doubt you. And you're not going to get the best people backing you and things like that. So when it matters, you sort of step up, I suppose.
You know, I mentioned to you before we started recording, I'm a dad of four. I've got two girls. And, you know, this space, this kind of adventure, exploring space is one that I'm very passionate about. It's, you know, it's what I love. And I don't feel like there's enough female adventurers who get the spotlight. And I wondered if you felt the same way, because I'm looking, you know, there's some great role models out there, yourself included, for my daughters, but it seems like the guys get all the spotlight. And I wondered if you felt the same way and you know, what role do you think you play in changing that?
I completely feel the same way. It's something that when I was a bit younger, it didn't bother me as much. You know, I would look up to, because it was all you had, I would look up to the explorers that we see now, the Bear Grylls, the Ed Staffords, all those sort of things when I was growing up as a teenager. And I was lucky enough as a young girl not for that to get in the way, not for gender to get in the way. But I know that a lot of the time, if you don't see someone who is like you doing these things, it's a lot harder to picture yourself doing it. And God, I do believe that there is a lot more opportunity given for male explorers, more male adventurers. There seems, I've faced constant battle with various TV channels and, you know, pitches and things like that, is you'll have an expedition or some idea of for a show or something like that, that you just know that if someone who was male who went in and just did it as this expedition and as an adventure would be fine as a show standalone, you know, that's it. But there always seems to be some barrier of, you know, I am completely all for adventurers for purpose and with purpose, but they put so much emphasis on the purpose aspect that they get in, that gets in the way of the adventure side. I don't know if that makes sense, but they always want there to be something else, some other reason, if from my experience, if you're a woman, for your reason for doing it rather than just because it's there.
Right.
And I do believe that there should be another reason, but I think just because it's there is also such a fantastic thing for young women and young girls to see that you're doing this as an adventure, that they're completely missing the sort of charm of what this could be.
Yeah.
I really don't know if that made sense, but because it's something that it gets to me a lot. So I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. And it really did make sense. And I think it's a complicated issue, and it's, you know, across all parts of society. It's not just isolated to this area that we're talking about, but I like the way that you explain it there, in terms of, if there are not other people like you doing things, then it makes it feel more out of reach. And I think that's really powerful, because it speaks beyond just gender, right? It speaks about a number of different things, so that,
yeah,
you know, you look at adventure and exploration, and it does feel like it has a bit of a diversity issue that we need to correct, because I think there are, you know, young children all around the country, as we talk about the UK, who need to see people like them to be inspired so that they can go on to do these things. So yeah, it makes complete sense. I don't know how you solve it, but I do think that more people like you doing what you're doing is definitely a really good start.
I think perseverance, and it will happen. It will definitely happen, I suppose. But being inspired is such a powerful tool, and I think a lot of times the people at the top might miss that thing alone is such a strong thing. I can think back to multiple documentaries that I've watched so many times because they provide this inspiration and this drive for me personally. Things and it's not all men, it's things like the Comic Relief, you know, Davina McCall doing big triathlon that she did, and seeing that process of people going through pain, people going through the planning stage and training, and then going to do it and facing, you know, such hardships but getting through it. Those programs with Ben Fogel and James Cracknell doing, you know, rowing the oceans and the South Pole, those I've watched so many times, and they really, really just taught me so much when I was growing up and now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've got a big vote here from my household. We want you to get a TV show, so we'll be advocating for you. I think it would be great to see you on the screens more, sharing your message, because it's really positive. I know in 2015 you were elected to become a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society. You've already mentioned them, and then in 2019 you joined the Council for the Scientific Exploration Society. I wondered what those appointments mean to you, how important they are to you.
They are such great things to, I mean, I suffer from what lots of people suffer from, and you do start to self-doubt and doubt yourself, and lose that energy and that drive. And that happens I think we all do it, and we go through these waves of feeling fantastic, and then you start to doubt yourself. And, oh, am I doing the right thing? And, but if you have these meetings, like we said, with like-minded people, and these places, the RGS and the Scientific Exploration Society, are these hubs of people who are like-minded. You have these frequent meetings and meetups and talks by other inspirational people, and it just fills you with energy again, and it just motivates you to think, no, I am doing the right thing, and push harder the next day, you know, keep going, I am doing it right. So they've just given me this, a bit of a backbone to make me keep doing what I'm doing. And I hope that I can also provide, when I'm going to these things, meeting people who are less adventurous or newer to the game than me, it's also giving them that confidence to go out and do it. There's so many questions that you hear regularly, like at these things. And I just put the message out as you've just got to start. If you want this enough, and there's questions like, well, how do I talk to my work about taking this time off? And I talk them through everything that my experience, and, you know, go out and get it. And hopefully they do then get a taste of adventure themselves.
It's probably a perfect time to segue into your latest venture, your YouTube channel, where I think that's at least part of the message there, is to try and help make adventure more accessible for people and give them the tips and the hints on how they can try and get started. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I started a YouTube channel not that long ago, maybe just a few weeks ago, really. And the idea is that, you know, adventure and expeditions, it's been very closed off, and it seems quite secretive if you don't know much about that world. Whereas once you've in it, or once you've got into it a tiny, tiny bit, then everyone's very friendly, and there's so much to learn very, very, very quickly. So it's giving that insight into adventure and extreme adventure, but also where to start, like a lot of the things that you're doing is, you know, day hiking and things like that. But how to start it right in with the idea of then taking it further and being more adventurous into the sort of the places where you never thought you could do, and all these wildernesses.
Are you enjoying filming that content?
I am. Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying filming it and editing it and creating it in that sense. It's one of those things that I think with lockdown as well, having these little goals frequently just keeps you alive and keeps you going, because I definitely need little goals regularly. So yeah, creating and putting the message out there, and hopefully helping at least some people feel like maybe they can take a new adventure for this year. I mean, I'm optimistic that this year we can hopefully have some adventures. So this is the time, in my opinion, if you've had millions of adventures in the past, or if you have never started before in your life, this is the time to now start dreaming and planning while we've got this, I hate the word unprecedented, we've heard that enough, but these times to start doing that.
Amen to that. I completely agree with you. And so I'm curious, because there are obviously different types of people, but you've got such a lust for adventure and exploration. How are you coping with lockdown? Are you spending it kind of scheming your next big trip? Or
I think a lot of people, you have your good days and your bad days. I have got trips planned. I mean, I'm a little nervous that some of them once again are going to be postponed. They are meant to be in the spring. So we'll see. I'm trying not to think too much about that, but I'm trying to at the moment presume that's going ahead. I've got another big expedition that I've sort of secured the funding for and everything like that in autumn. So, I mean, fingers crossed that goes ahead. A little worried about vaccination certificates and all that. So I am scheming for that, but I'm trying not to scheme all at once. I'm trying to like do little nuggets here and there. And then with the YouTube channel, that's sort of keeping me going and just taking it day by day, really, like making sure I get a walk in each day and making sure I train each day is really what's getting me through. Otherwise, yeah. And it's a very hard place to be in your mind, constantly doubting, you know, are your plans going to be cancelled? Everyone's facing it. And, you know, I guess what we can be thankful is that we're not sick, or our loved ones are safe and all of that. So that's something you have to keep reminding. And adventures will resume again.
Perfectly said. I definitely agree with that. And if you're kind of approaching it like I am, which it sounds like you are, I think there's also probably an interim period where we can be a bit more adventurous relatively close to home, right? I mean, now with our daily exercise, you can you can be adventurous that way by trying new things and doing new things. I recently just plotted out the boundary of my local borough, and it turns out it's 56 kilometers. So I'm planning to run that in a day, just because it feels like an adventure.
Absolutely.
But I like that idea, and I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll start to slowly be able to get into it as the vaccine rolls out. Well, let's hope so. I've got my first adventure for 2021, a big adventure abroad planned for May. So I don't know whether I'm going to be going or not, but I hope so.
Yeah, I hope you are as well.
So as we talk about adventures, we're now talking about planning the big ones. When you go away, do you have any must-have essentials? What's the first thing that gets packed into? I get some great answers to this question. So what's the first thing that gets packed? Have you got anything that's an essential go-to that goes in the pack for the first time?
I've got a few things, but I suppose the one of the things that always goes in and I always feel quite excited about is my long spoon. So my long spoon, so I can eat my dehydrated food, excites me, because I suppose because when you're on expedition and you're opening up your dehydrated food, it's quite an exciting moment. Yeah. So I put that in my bag pocket. I always have just like some other things that I just love using, like my sparker to start my stove. Things that, again, that just means that you're having food, yeah, again, doesn't it? But the long spoon. If you don't have a long spoon, invest, because it means that you don't get grubby hands, and they're really light, and you feel like you can, it's just nice to use. I love a long spoon.
That's a great tip, and it's probably symbolic as well, right? Because you know that when you're packing that, you're going somewhere where you're going to need dehydrated food.
That's it. Yeah, no, it's exciting when I'm packing that.
That's awesome. For my local adventures, one of my favorite things is my jet boil. I just love it. It's such a condensed bit of kit, and I can stick it in the pack and go for a walk with the kids. And then when I just crack that out somewhere when we're, you know, away from home, and make the kids a hot chocolate, they absolutely love it. That feels really adventurous to them. To us, we're just making a hot chocolate, but to them.
Yeah, if you're getting your jet boil out in lockdown time and you're outside, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'm going to get into trouble for that. Is that technically a picnic? Well, let's hope not.
Yeah.
I might have to edit that bit out.
Don't worry, you haven't been doing it recently. You've just been doing it.
Yes, exactly. Good point. We didn't date stamp it. We'll be fine. So, Lucy, I was looking on your website ahead of this call, and I've also heard you mention this a couple of times before. And on the homepage, you talk about not losing your botheredness. Which I love that phrase, and I really enjoyed hearing you explain it. I wondered if you could just talk the listeners through that concept.
Yes, I first came across it on my first expedition to Svalbard, actually, and I've adopted it as my own and taken it from there and taken it to the extremes, I suppose. But don't lose your botheredness means, essentially, as soon as you either say or you think the term and the words, oh, I can't be bothered. And if you really listen out for it, people say it all the time. Oh, I can't be bothered to do that. Oh, I can't be bothered. Or you think it. Oh, I need to do that, but I can't be bothered. As soon as you think that, it's my little rule. Most of the time, you're not a superhero, but most of the time, you then just go and do it straight away, no matter what it is. Like, oh, you know, it could be, oh, I've got to get my washing out of, like my running kit out of the washer and hang it up. It's like, oh, I can't be bothered to do it now. I'll do it later. It's like, it's just going to hang, you know, it'll hang over you if you just don't do it straight away. So go and do it, and then you're sorted. Then the next thing in the morning when you're going to want to run, it's going to be so much easier to go and get your dry kit out. And if you don't do these things when it does come to your mind, then it will just build and build and build and become much. And that weight of feeling like everything's on your shoulders happens so much, doesn't it? And we all know that as soon as you start and start ticking the list, like doing those things on your list, then it's, oh, I feel much better. Well, don't even make it get to the list stage, just do it there. And then of course on expeditions and adventures, it can be very, very serious if you don't do what you think it's in your mind. So whether it be sorting out your tent because it's flapping in the wind, oh, I can't bother, it's fine right now, and then a storm comes while you're sleeping and suddenly your tent's blowing and you don't have a shelter and, you know, it's minus 30. So things like that, or just mundane things like your shoelace is coming undone and your crampon's a little bit loose. Oh, it's okay, I'll manage, can't be bothered right now. Before you know it, you've tripped and something's happened. So yeah, just if you can, as much as you can, as soon as you think or say, I can't be bothered, just go and do it. It probably won't be as bad as you think.
Yeah, it's a really neat way of telling people to kind of manage the details. I think when you're out on some of these, some of these trips and these adventures, I mean, you're certainly infinitely more extreme than ones that I've been on. But attention to detail is important. But it kind of sounds a bit dull to say to mind your attention to detail and look at the small details. But I like that, not losing your botheredness. That's definitely one to remember, one I use with the kids as well.
Definitely. And maintaining kit and things like that, so it lasts, so it doesn't fail on you when you're suddenly away for 2 weeks, a month, you know.
Yeah.
So important to just, don't lose your botheredness.
I think it's a really important lesson for young people listening as well. I know we do have young people listening in, that you have to look after your kit. And it's something that I tell to my kids all the time. So when we get back from doing something, square all your kit away and get it sorted, because you need it to be in good working order the next time. And it's kind of easy for the kids just to ditch it and go and grab the iPad or something. But it's a good metaphor for life, isn't it? Making sure that you know, you're really cautious with the things that you value and you need, so that they're still there for you when you need them.
Yeah, and just by putting things away in the right place, no matter what it is, doesn't have to be expedition kit. It just means that when you need it the next time, you're just going to save yourself time, you're going to save yourself bother, and that thought process of thinking, oh, I can't quite figure out what needs to be done. Just make it easy for your future self.
I think that's really interesting. I think that whole concept of not losing your botheredness, you're definitely onto something there. So I'm excited to see what else you do with it. So before we kind of start to wind up, I mean, you've been on some amazing expeditions in your career so far. I'm curious to know, without being too macabre, have you had some pretty hairy moments that you kind of really questioned what you were doing?
I've had many, many hairy moments. The worst, I would say, would be as a trip of itself, was when going climbing in Tajikistan. That just fills me with, in most trips, you come out of them and the pros outweigh the cons. And that was sketchy. Right, I know what happened, what went wrong there. We'll learn from it. But oh my gosh, that was such an amazing, fulfilling trip. Tajikistan, that expedition was just fills, you know, we came... There was just myself and climbing partner and boyfriend Tim who went. So just two of us climbing some 7,000 meter peaks up there. And there isn't much written about Tajikistan. You can talk to people who've been there before, but the mountain itself changes. The mountains around there change so much, especially in comparison to places next door like Kyrgyzstan, things like that. It's whether it be climate change or something like that, but it's the molding and the rockfall and the crevasse fields and things like that are changing so dramatically, so you can't really plan and prepare from talking to other people and reading things. And we planned as best we could, but we were constantly told that this was going to be one thing when it wasn't when we got there. And the whole trip was just sketchy, and things could have gone wrong and dramatically really, really wrong so many times. And the last final straw was when we narrowly missed. We should have been in the helicopter getting out of that mountain that crashed and sadly killed five people, and we would have definitely been amongst those people that would have been killed. And it just felt like, you know, that was just it, the whole trip felt like that. And how on earth did we miss that? We the long story short is we were meant to be on one. There were two. Well, it was one helicopter bringing people out of the mountain. One, and they come 2 days. At the end of the season, they don't come any other time. And it was an old Russian helicopter. And we were always meant to be on the second day. And out of the blue, the first day, right, you, Tim, Lucy, you come, you're coming on this one. It's like, oh, okay, great, great for us. We're getting out of this mountain quicker. Like, this has been a terrible, scary experience. Let's just get out now. And sure enough, we got on the helicopter, and it was as bad as we remembered when we arrived. Flying too close to the glacier, just when it took off, it flew backwards by accident, and so many wrong things. We were holding hands, looking at each other, thinking, are we gonna get through this? And we landed safely, and it was like, oh, okay, phew, time to go home. Next day we hear that the helicopter had crashed, and the survivors had spent the whole night on the crevasse field. And the only reason that they had been saved and found was because one of the climbers one of the Russian climbers had had a sat phone of themselves. It wasn't like the pilots had any sat phones or there was any GPS, and they had one and they managed to call in and give the details. So the best thing that came out of Tajikistan was a love for mustard and stale bread. I don't know what that says about that. Yeah, it's a wonderful country, but the mountaineering, just be aware, I'd be cautious.
Yeah, sounds like it was pretty scary. Not one you necessarily look back on fondly, right?
That's exactly it. Like the other trips that have had sketchy near-death experience, I still look back fondly. But right.
Not so much. Well, I'm glad you made it out okay. And, you talked a little bit already about planning for the future and scheming in lockdown for big adventures. Have you got any that you can share with us, or are they all top secret?
I won't share completely, but I am meant to be going in autumn back to the jungle, to the area that I went earlier. It's last year now. But doing a much bigger expedition with a similar group of guys. But this will probably take 2 months or something like that. So that's the plan. I'm also meant to be guiding in the Arctic a couple times this spring, but we shall see.
Yeah, COVID dependent, as with everything these days.
Yeah, I really, really hope I can get back to the Arctic. But, yeah. So, fingers crossed.
And is there a big dream on the horizon that you said, I always wanted to do this, you know?
I try not to have those, because if I do that, then I'll just want to do it straight away. Right. My big dream at the moment is this one coming up, or this whole year. The more Arctic and this jungle expedition. If I got sucked into thinking, you know, my big dream is this, I would hope that I would have done that already. So right. I try and make my dream a reality every time.
That's a good way to think of it as well, because you're living in the moment then. You're just, you know, you're not looking too far ahead.
Yeah, I don't like to be too, I mean, I don't like to think too far, because if I don't achieve it quick enough, then that won't do anything for my self-esteem. I plan very, very big expeditions, but I know that somehow I can figure out how to make it happen.
That's awesome. Well, so Lucy, it's just been so much fun talking to you. 28 Summers, as you know, is all about encouraging people to live life more adventurously. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, going to the jungle or going to the Arctic. I think for a lot of people, it won't mean those things. But it's the spirit of living adventurously more than anything, particularly as a notion of time, right? Just optimizing and utilizing the time that you have in the best way possible, so that you can have those kind of childlike sensations of adventure. I wondered what your top tips would be. So for people listening who've enjoyed hearing your story and are thinking, yeah, maybe I could do something more adventurous, what would be your top tips?
If you are lucky enough to have a garden, go and try and sleep out in the garden, and you will feel so like a new person the next morning. You might feel a bit tired, sure enough, but you will feel like you've had such a little adventure during this lockdown by doing that. I really recommend trying to sleep outdoors one time. And like you're doing, you know, you secretly, you can go and eat outside. And you use a stove and create something with your family out there, and do that and sleep in the stars. And yeah, there's something really lovely to that. And you're just connecting with nature, aren't you, by doing that? And we all feel better if we take off our shoes and feel the grass, or if we climb a tree and feel the bark. Go and climb a tree, eat outside and sleep outside.
Love it. What a perfect way to finish today. So Lucy, it's been a real pleasure to have you come on the 28 Summers podcast. And I'm excited to see, once COVID leaves us alone, what you get up to next. And I'll continue to watch the YouTube channel and enjoy all your content. So thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's been an honor to chat.
So there you go. That was the very awesome Lucy Shepherd. There are so many things I love about Lucy's story and message. From her incredibly supportive parents to ensuring that you surround yourself with people who get you, she dropped some serious wisdom in this episode. The way she talks about building resilience rather than being born with it, I think is so powerful, and it's such a strong message to anyone who is looking to live more adventurously but nervous about starting. Lucy's all about being proactive and getting after the things that make her heart sing. And I think that's also really strong advice. Don't sit back and wait for adventure to come to you. Go out there and find adventure. If you want to follow Lucy, which you absolutely should, please follow her on Instagram at Lucy Sheps or check out her YouTube channel. As always, thank you so much for listening. The number of people listening is growing massively every week, and I'm overwhelmed by how much support is out there. I'm so grateful for all your support, the time that you're taking to listen, and for sharing the podcast. Please remember to follow me on Instagram at One Day Adventurer. And if you can find the time, I'd be so grateful for a review, which really helps me continue to bring great guests to the podcast. That's it from me today. Stay happy, stay healthy, and remember to live life adventurously.